You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
There are moments that the words don't reach. There is suffering too terrible to name. You hold your child as tight as you can and push away the unimaginable. The moments when you're in so deep, it feels easier to just swim down. The Hamiltons move uptown and learn to live with the unimaginable.
Welcome back to Pod for Ham. I'm your host, David J. Lohr, and joining me this time are Shannon Sutterth. Hello.
Hello.
And Travis Bedard.
Greetings.
And Paul Smith.
Hello. I have such a boring name compared to everyone else.
We've spent years crafting these. It's,
you know. Mine's an alias. I haven't chosen a better one yet.
Well, and yours doesn't get mispronounced very often.
That's true.
A plus.
That's true.
And we're front loading all the humor into the show today because this week's song is It's Quiet Uptown, which there are plenty of songs in this show that will make you cry, and this is maybe the most deadly of them. In the show at this point, Philip Hamilton has died, and Eliza and Alexander are coming together over his death and slowly put their lives back together. And it is just devastating if you're not expecting it, I think.
I've listened to the original cast recording over 200 times, and I not a single time have I not wept through this song.
Yeah.
I don't think I've made it through yet either. And what's fantastic for me about this song is that, yeah, there's the ugly crying every time you get through it, but it's at different parts because
right.
it's above and beyond being a really great encapsulation of this moment in a relationship. It's also a really well-crafted scene, and you just get stung at different moments in the scene, depending on where you are and what part you happen to key in on that time.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it'll be the word unimaginable the first time will hit me. Sometimes it'll hit me at a different point in the song. Sometimes it's the forgiveness near the end.
Yeah.
And that's the...
I've told many people that forgiveness is my trigger word now. Like, someone, just a random person
can
walk
thing.
Up to me on the street and just say forgiveness and I'll break down.
No, in my group of friends, honestly, you can hashtag anything. Hashtag, can you imagine? And
yeah.
It just, you can feel it coming on.
I had one of the boys the other day said to me, could I have some chocolate milk? That would be enough. And, you know, it's like not even meaning to make a reference. I mean, he's heard it. He knows it. But he's not. It's not like, hey, let's make Dad cry. Yeah. Hamilton joke. It's just, you know, that would be enough. That's all I want. And I just
happens.
Went, oh, my God. No.
I'm feeling like a proper cold-hearted witch now because I can make it through this song without crying at times. I can.
You might just be a well-evolved person.
That's right. I don't cry every time, I will say. But I get choked up a lot.
Yeah, it can. It depends on, you know, what am I doing? Am I just playing it in the background while I'm working on other things and not, like, paying close attention? Am I listening more actively and then it's more likely to hit me? It varies quite a bit what grabs me, from listening to imagining the performance. I've been lucky enough to see it. I think most of us have. And you know, just remembering in my case how John Rua reacted when Philippa Sue reaches over, takes his hand. I mean, he just looked like he was about to totally lose it. And that, you know, kind of thing.
I've seen it twice in Chicago, once in New York, twice in Chicago. The second time I saw it in Chicago, it was with the alternate of Hamilton, Joseph Morales. And his performance, I think, is probably my favorite in that song, not as Hamilton overall, but in that song, because at the end, when Eliza reaches over and takes his hand and you get the whole forgiveness, he broke down on stage.
Oh,
that wow. actor fell apart on stage and was like, you know, kissing her hand. And I don't, it looked spontaneous. I mean, maybe he's just an extraordinary actor, but it looked like he fell apart in the performance. So.
Well, and I can imagine that just as the way the scene is built, it's the first moment in this show where we see Hamilton cave to anyone, where mm-hmm. we see him bargain with anyone. We know he did bargain in a back room, but that was off stage. And here we watch him.
We weren't in that room.
We were not in that room. We are in this room, and we watch him demonstrate that he's listening to someone other than himself, that he cares about someone other than himself, and that he wants to make this right, that he understands he did something wrong, that that mattered, and that he's willing to abnegate himself to make this right.
That's the beauty of the structure of this song. For once, Hamilton, the man of words, is using other people's words because he doesn't have any left of his own. This song is just chock full of callback after callback after callback, most of it to That Would Be Enough, and because that's all he can use to express himself at this point.
Yeah, and both musically and lyrically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the first time that he accepts the fact that he can't write himself out of a situation.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it's the first line of the song. There are moments that the words don't reach.
Right.
And then we make him deal with it. And it's awesome.
it's well, awesome is a word for it, I suppose. Yeah. Devastating.
In the actual inspiring sense, yes.
Well, on the craft side of things, I mean, again, I've said this in a couple of episodes at least. Part of what gets me choked up, part of what gets that swelling in my chest that I know is like right before this like massive torrent of tears. Part of it is simply the joy that this exists as a creator, as someone who does this kind of thing, you know, and seeing how it all comes together and how it all fit together and how it just works, right? And this is one of those songs. I mean, the whole show is terrific, but this is one of those songs where you see it all working. You see it coming together. You have That Would Be Enough weaving in and out of this. Not only that, you have Hamilton himself using the melody and the words from That Would Be Enough. So it stuck with him. It comes back. And now it's him pleading with her instead. And this is far more important in the long run than the earlier version. The earlier version is a little lighter. Then it comes back as, you know, stay alive. That would be enough, right? And this time someone didn't stay alive. But as long as they have each other, that would be enough, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
And even, you know, the grand scheme of That Would Be Enough and that set of musicality. And then one line that gets me a lot, you knock me out, I fall apart. The callback to Dear Theodosia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. When they had just gotten those children and everything started.
Which is the last time that Hamilton was at a loss for words.
Right.
Rhyming son with son. And,
yeah.
And I words good. And then here we are again.
And I've been there.
on the other side of that, having lost that. And part of what ends me throughout this song is that Lynn's barely holding it together. Lynn's crying his way through the song, and there's just sort of that empathetic, I'm with you. Oh, no, please hold it together.
Mm-hmm. The song is also, it's an important, even if the audience is not emotionally invested in Hamilton and Eliza, which I don't know how anybody could not be, but
I can think of one.
Oh, okay, drop names.
Uh-oh.
He got booed out of the theater.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right.
But you can tell when we're recording this episode.
This is the first time I've laughed in 2 weeks. Let's put it that way. This song is an important just, I don't know, catharsis for the audience, because, or not even, not catharsis, that's not the right word, but all the way up to this point.
It is a release point.
Yeah, I mean,
catharsis, that works.
For much of the production up to this song, it's kind of been not glorifying violence, but I mean, there's been war and there's been duels, and
right.
This is the first time where as a work of art, it stops and catches its breath and acknowledges and lets the audience catch their breath and acknowledge that all of this violence has pretty serious consequences.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Because previous duels or mentions of duels, that yeah, somebody's been hit, but nothing's happened, or
yeah.
it's treated as this almost a joke, the way, you know, most disputes die and no one shoots and all of this sort of thing. It's just part of the culture. And finally, the consequence is here and right in front of us, and it's devastating.
And the more you listen to it, the more you start to realize he hits the five stages of grief in this song, too. And he illustrates them pretty damn well.
Yeah, what stage are we in right now?
I'm still in denial. I don't know. Wait, no. I live in the state of Indiana. I'm in anger.
Yeah, something else about this. I was looking through the Hamiltome, as I often do, to refresh my memory and look over for things to say. And, you know, after reading the previous sort of little chapter in front of the song, which is, you know, just gut-wrenching in its own words, because you had Andy Brubaker, the choreographer, his daughter was going through chemotherapy and treatment of cancer, and everyone in the cast was worried about her. And towards the end of preparations, two members of the company lost their 16-year-old son. And that, all that sort of stuff was just, you know, getting me. And then I'm looking at the text itself. This may be the only song in the tome that has no footnotes. It just
right.
stands yep. there
yeah.
all on its own. It's
and
all
it's
there.
On black pages. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, even just reading that chapter in the book is devastating. Everything about this song is devastating. Every discussion about it, every exploration of how it was written. It's Oscar Eustace, Oscar and mm-hmm. his wife, Lori.
Yes.
I can't remember. And they're the directors of the public theater,
yes,
where
I think
it was
you're
performed
right.
off Broadway. Yeah.
Yes.
It was their 16-year-old son that died. And to get even more explicit, that happened the day before they were going to do stage rehearsals for the song. So they had not, the company had not, Lynn had just written the song. They hadn't even practiced it yet. And then the day before they go in to perform it is when that happened. So, I mean, that we can't listen to this song without tearing up. Imagine having to perform it under those circumstances. So
another one of those points that sometimes it gets me, sometimes I can get past it, is when Alexander says, look around, and he can't continue the reference because the next line is how lucky we are to be alive right now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just, you know, the craft in this show. Oh,
well,
my God.
And the last structural point for me, is, Renee Angelica speaks for Eliza throughout the song, and it isn't an argument. It isn't any sort of haggling between them. She's not denying him and giving in. There's nothing. It's Lynn talking to the wall until she decides that it's time, and she doesn't answer him. There isn't an answer. There isn't an I love you. There isn't a call back to a happy moment. It's simply an admission that, yes, it's quiet uptown, and it's perfect. It's one of those moments of subtlety in a show full of bombast that highlights the fact that he knows exactly what he's doing.
As we all cry for a few minutes.
Yeah. Well, no, I, in talking about the Oscar Eustace stuff, the article about his response to the song is another level of heartbreaking, and I recommend you all go find it. It's can't.
We can put that in the show notes. A link to that.
It is
devastating.
I'm sure this has been covered in multiple previous episodes, but the dual casting that the show does allows for so much brilliance, and to no better effect, I think, than the dual casting of Lawrence and Philip.
Right. Right.
As that person gets to know, is that a little Philip?
That's a little bobblehead. Tom Baker.
Oh, okay.
But he's agreeing.
That actor gets to portray a powerful loss for Hamilton in both acts. I mean, it's just one of the countless strokes of brilliance, of genius that Lin-Manuel put into this, but I think it's most effective with this dual casting, these characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there in the opening, you know, we fought for him, I died for him.
Mm-hmm. And both twice.
Yeah. Well, here's something if we want to go in that direction. Has everyone heard Kelly Clarkson's cover on the mixtape?
I was just going to say one thing that I've been curious about. I'm always curious about songs that live outside of musicals, because sometimes, you know, in earlier decades, that was the thing. You just had the hits. They didn't really have anything to do with the story. And even in Rodgers and Hammerstein and Kurt and Hammerstein, yes, they have context, but most of those songs can stand outside the show. And for instance, the version of Defying Gravity from Wicked that is the single is almost totally different lyrics. It is a separate song that happens to be very much like the song in the show. And one of the things that is astonishing to me about this and the mixtape is how many of the songs, even without changing them, I mean, some of the songs on the mixtape are variations and embellishments and everything. This one is pretty straight. And it stands up by itself, all by itself, outside of time, outside of the show, and it is still gorgeous.
And I think it holds up better than the other straight up cover version that's been released so far. Usher's "Wait for It" doesn't really hold up for me in the same way that I think this song does. I think the overproduction pulls it away for me, but the emotional content of it is still there. And I think that surprised me a little bit. I expected it to be a little bit more sanded down than it is.
Well, it turns out Kelly Clarkson was pregnant when she was recording that. I think it resonated with her. Wow. And I think that comes through. Yeah. I need to listen a few more times. I'm still adjusting the lyrics in my head. Where she's shifting, of course, they take out specific references to Hamilton right. And talk in more general terms. But other than that, the lyrics are pretty much kept the same. But the references of where Clarkson is singing I, but yet it was Hamilton's voice in the musical and that sort of thing, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around those. But overall, I think they did a good job.
I think it's a great cover. I also have, there's a little cognitive dissonance with me listening to, like I said, I've heard the original multiple hundreds of times, so it's right. difficult to hear an altered cover version of it. But I like it, and it's still just as powerful. I agree. I think this is better than the Wait For It, which actually Wait For It is the song that my wife and I most wanted to hear, like, on the radio. That's the song of any of the songs in the entire play. That's the one that we were like, you know, that could probably be a radio hit. I just wasn't particularly taken with Usher's interpretation of it, but
yeah, I mean, I think the version from the original cast would work just fine.
Yeah.
On the radio. Yeah.
Agreed.
I think I was most surprised just in general to have that sort of Disney credits version of a song, because it's been so long since Broadway crossed over like this.
Yeah.
That having a top of the line pop star do a credits cover of one of your songs has just been completely off the radar. And yet here we are, and we're going to get multiple of them.
Yeah. I mean, I vaguely remember when, Send in the Clowns first hit as a pop hit. And it's from a show that is, you know, A Little Night Music is not the friendliest musical comedy in the world. You know, it's Sondheim doing Ingmar Bergman, you know, that's kind of, you know, I know most of the people I know would probably go, oh, no, I don't see that. And but, you know, there was just something about that song. And again, it's pretty much as is. And it just has had cover after cover after cover after cover. It's probably his biggest hit. And I think we're going to see that with some of the songs from this.
I'm frankly surprised that it hasn't hit radio more than it has, or at all. I don't know if it has hit radio yet. Maybe that's a clearances thing. Like maybe they haven't granted permission to play it on radio. I don't know, but I just with as huge a phenomenon as this is, I'm surprised I don't hear it more.
And it could be the radio stations too. You know, it's.
Yeah, they're awfully pre-programmed these days.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I wouldn't know. I haven't listened to radio in a very long time.
From the Clear Channel Color Tile Studio in Louisville, Kentucky. It's like, you know, you're just playing a tape of a bunch of songs and it's okay, whatever.
Yeah, when I was listening to my pre-programmed stations at one point, and it's like of the 10 stations, 7 of them were supposed to be contemporary pop music, and one day I'm punching through and 6 of them were playing the same blasted Adele song at the same time. I'm like, no,
yeah,
this is not how you do it.
So have we cried enough yet?
Man.
the corner of my eye, I mean, there's a tear trying to escape, but I listened to this song, both versions of this song multiple times today leading up to this recording, and wept through every one of them. So I expected to get choked up in the podcast. Fortunately, you guys are funny. So
we try.
We try. It's
we're compensating. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. we know what this song can do to people. So
because for me, the line of this musical that gets me every single time, is I'm not afraid. I know who I married.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I mean, in all of the songs it occurs. And it's sort of the most real relationshipy part of Alexandra and Eliza for me straight through. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not confused about who each other are. We try to make it work. We try to bridge it. But I'm not afraid. I know who I married. And yeah.
We'll get a little place in Harlem and figure it out.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to step outside of this particular song just briefly to comment on Eliza?
Sure.
I'll allow it, counselor, but watch yourself.
Thank you. So just to add a little more heartbreak here, let's think about what we get from Eliza at this point. So previous the time before this that we saw her was I Hope You Burn, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And removing herself from the narrative.
Then we get this with forgiveness. And then the next time we see her is her trying to get him. She's forgiven him and they're living together again. And she's trying to get him to come back to bed. And he's, unbeknownst to her, he's heading off to die. So just that triptych right there of Eliza is pretty devastating. You think about what came right before this song. She only gets one line in this song. And then the next time we see her, she's very innocently, I mean, she's in love with Hamilton again. Everything's, you know, sunshine and puppies as far as she's concerned.
And for that to lead into the final song where she's talking about how she's working to preserve Hamilton's legacy. There's points in there that catch in my throat and make me cry too. Different places all the time.
Yeah, I have. I said forgiveness is my trigger word. I wasn't joking about that. That final song has one as well. I won't spoil it since the podcast hasn't gotten there yet, but yeah, that song has.
I would hope anyone listening to this podcast has listened to the entire album by now.
You never know. You never know.
Spoilers.
Someone out there heard the Kelly Clarkson cover and they're tuning in right now to say, what is this Hamilton thing all about?
If that's true, listen to the rest.
I've said this on the regular Incomparable before, at least twice before. I didn't used to cry at things, right? I cried at Snoopy Come Home when I was little. I cried when Spock died, and not when he died, but when Jim Kirk's voice caught in the eulogy, right? That's the moment that always got me. And I cried at Jim Henson's memorial service that they did this special with the Muppets. It was sort of like a biography of Jim, and Kermit wasn't showing up. And they're like, where's Kermit? I don't know where Kermit is. And at the end of the song, at the end of the show, they do, if just one person believes in you long enough and strong enough. And that just killed me, right?
I'm almost 50 years old and I can still cry at all three of those things.
Well, same here. And then, but everything else, you know, Old Yeller, nothing. Bambi's mother, her.
You're a monster. You are a monster.
David J. Lore!
I am a monster. But once I had children, all bets were off. Suddenly, it was just like, you know, everything was freighted with import. Everything was full of meaning. And you know, as good as this show is, if you have, and you know, let me try that again. As good as this show is, as someone just single or just, you know, childless, it is devastating as a parent. It is devastating.
I believe Lynn has said that when he was writing this song, their child had not yet been born.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had their dog in mind. Like the emotion that he was putting into writing this song was directed at their dog. And it wasn't until their child was born before it went to Broadway. So, you know, in his performances, he at least had the child aspect, but he was writing it about his dog.
Wow. Well, having lived through several pets, I can buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Paul was saying he'd listened to it several times. I've been basically just listening to the two versions on a loop for the last 2 hours, so I'm spent.
Wow. Well, speaking of, I think we're probably all spent. I don't know about you. So I will thank you all for joining me this week. Paul Smith, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Shannon Sutterth, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And Travis, I'm giving you a hug.
Thank you. That would be enough.
That would be enough because you're big and my arms aren't that long and, you know, but we'll make it work. We'll make it work. We'll go uptown and we'll leave with a little laugh again because this song is just, God. I'm David J. Lore and join us again for Pod for Ham.
Walking by your side, talking by your side, have